Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception Perception, the show. Today, we are going and starting our division by division wide receiver rankings. We're going to rank some of these wide receivers in the division, and we start in the AFC East. We're going to talk about who's going to be the most productive, a dark horse wide receiver that could surprise in 2026, and maybe just overall best real-life wide receiver. Matt, we'll start with you, Matt. Well, first of all, how are you doing, pal?
I'm good. I said this to you that it's a rough start to AFC East, honestly, because I think you could make an argument that this is the weakest wide receiver division, especially the depth of some of these rooms. Now, obviously, that's because Miami's in the mix here. Are we just trying to rank like who, just the number one, like who's or the, like for all these teams? Because my question to you actually would be, how many wide receiver twos on some of these other teams would we rank before we got to a Miami Dolphin? That's what I think is an interesting conversation, but we'll get into it.
Sure. I mean, hey, listen, you know what? As a matter of fact, just for the AFC East, I do think it'd be a fun exercise just to rank the receivers in general.
Yeah.
And you know, again, it's the Jets, it's the Bills, it's the Patriots, and it's the Dolphins. Right now, the Dolphins de facto, maybe possibly from training camp reports, it's Jalen Tolbert. Maybe down the road, it'll be Chris Bell. I don't know. I mean, it's just Miami's
it's not going to be Jalen Tolbert. Okay. Like, it's not going to be Jalen Tolbert. It's not going to be Tutu Atwell. The names, you know, whatever.
It
won't be one of those guys. I think it will be one of the interesting younger players, whether it's Malik Washington in his third season or one of the rookies. Obviously, Chris Bell was placed on the NFI list because he's coming off the torn ACL in college. Caleb Douglas, another third rounder for them. I think it will probably, I mean, shoot, I guess it will end up being one of those guys. If it's Jalen Tolbert, man, that stinks because not, and I think Tolbert, I don't even know how to say, like, you could do worse, I guess, like, than Jalen Tolbert on an NFL roster, but him being your, would you even call him the most pedigreed receiver on the team?
I mean, I guess you have to, right? Like, who else is there?
Like, Tutu Atwell's had some cool catches every now and again. I don't know. I'm struggling here. I'm struggling here on the Dolphins.
Tutu Atwell's a Super Bowl champion. So, I mean, I guess maybe Tutu Atwell.
Maybe. Oh, my God. I guess, yeah. If we're going to call Jahan Dotson Super Bowl champion Jahan Dotson, do we have to say that about Tutu Atwell?
If we're talking about the best of the best in this division, I think most people would say, and you could just, you know, tell me if you disagree here, Garrett Wilson, DJ Moore, AJ Brown. Wilson, obviously, with the Jets, DJ Moore with the Bills, and AJ Brown with the Patriots. I think it's a very clear cut to me, anyways, top three in this division. As you mentioned, the wide receiver twos on a lot of these different teams, it's pretty tough, man. But again, if we're ranking those three, who's number one, two, three, and who ends up being the most productive? Those two conversations are a little bit different.
Yeah, and I think the wild card here is DJ Moore, because I just, you know, I've been starting to do more season preview content, you know, starting to guest on podcasts and stuff, and I've started to get, you know, some DJ Moore questions, and I just like I don't really know how I feel about DJ Moore in this Bills offense, especially from, honestly, both from a production standpoint and a real life standpoint. I get why they acquired him. I think he is still a useful player. He obviously has familiarity with Joe Brady, the play caller now and head coach for the Buffalo Bills. But And it was a desperate need, but essentially what they're doing is just saying like, hey, we insert DJ Moore here. We go to work. All our problems are solved because the only other major addition, quote unquote, major addition they made in the room is Skylar Bell. And I think Skylar Bell went in the right range for his skill set. He was, to me, a day three receiver that I think in time could be a speed Z option. Okay. Could even open the season as the wide receiver three if he has a better training camp than Keon Coleman or Josh Palmer, which is like, to me, a low bar to clear. I think he could be the third receiver to open the season, which I think would be a big win for Skylar Bell. Skill set probably fits the offense too. But again, my point in saying all that is essentially it's just like DJ Moore is the main acquisition here. And I just really don't know where I'm at with DJ Moore at this point in his NFL career. You know, he's been in the league since 2018. This is his third NFL team. Typically, we don't see receivers jump another level once they get to their third team at this point in their careers.
Right.
And he's coming off two down seasons, like back to back, and not just statistically either. That's the thing. I do think like you can do a lot of context with the per route data and some of his fall off from a stats based perspective. One, because I just don't think him and Caleb Williams ever fully clicked. And I don't think he was a good fit in Ben Johnson's offense. And I also, I think just the way Caleb Williams has played in his first 2 years, which, you know, this is not something that should haunt him the rest of his career, but he might just be a guy where like some of these players have like lower per route data because he, you know, gets into creation mode and hasn't really kind of clicked as a creation mode quarterback just yet. Anyways, whole nother side topic. My point in saying all that is that not even just the stats are down for DJ Moore, like reception perception wise, he was better in 2025 than 2024, you know, 63% success rate versus man in 24, 67% in 2025, about 77% success rate versus zone, which is pretty close to what he did in 24. But those numbers are all down from like his final year in Carolina, where he was a 71% success rate versus man player. He was kind of 72 to 71% all the way through from 2020 to 2022. And I don't really know what to do with that, right? Like, I don't think he's declined physically or anything like that. I think he still has some speed and has some juice. And I think he will provide something of what the Bills need. And I do think he fits well with Josh Allen, who's not like a details oriented quarterback with his wide receivers, as I've talked about on the show. Mm-hmm. But he's just like the wild card to me here, because I don't really know what we're going to get from him in 2026.
Yeah. Again, it's just when you look at his numbers, they're in decline. And so it's really hard to kind of sort of build the case that, he's going to improve in Buffalo. Look, when Stephon Diggs went from Minnesota to Buffalo, it was a different story. It was a different ball game, right? Like, and I think a lot of people are bringing that comparison in when they're talking about DJ Moore. And it's just, listen, man, they're not even in the same ballpark in terms of route running and crispiness and just all that kind of stuff, right? So
even put that aside, like where they're at in their careers too.
Great
you
point.
Know, yeah. That, yeah. Diggs was still, there clearly was more to be mined from him there, and it was his second NFL team. You know, this is, again, this is DJ Moore's third NFL team. He's deeper into his career at this point. Diggs was traded to Buffalo after he was drafted in 2015, and he was traded going to the 2020 season. So that was his fifth year versus for DJ Moore. This is what, his 8th season, ninth season in the league.
Yeah, it's tough, man. I mean, again, we're talking about a 29-year-old wide receiver there for Buffalo. It does help that he has familiarity, I think, with Joe Brady, man. But I don't know, dude. I think at the end of the day, you know what? Let me ask you this question. Would you have rather, who do you think would have been a better fit for Buffalo, just from a skills perspective? DJ Moore at 29 or Mike Evans in however old he is right now?
Well, I mean, Evans is also a big wild card where here's what's going to happen with Mike Evans this year. He's either going to, you know, play five games and be kind of a whiff, or he's going to score 10 plus touchdowns and be awesome. You know, like that's pretty much, that's one or the other. I think that's true in San Francisco. I think that's true in Buffalo in a hypothetical universe. I do think the player that Mike Evans theoretically is, and I think he is like a risky signing, obviously, because he's deep into his career. He's had multiple injuries, but theoretically the player that he is, I think probably helps the Bills a little bit more than DJ Moore does. Now, Moore, I think, is not, like, I don't think Moore is toast. I just think he might be more of like a number two than a number one at this point. And this team does really need, like, in my opinion, need a true number one. But again, he's not a he's not a bad press coverage receiver. He's not a bad man coverage receiver. But those numbers are just down from the last, certainly the last time he played in Joe Brady's offense, which is, you know, 6 years ago at this point. So it's been quite some time.
Yeah, I just bring it up just because, again, I think this Bills offense needs a guy that can consistently get open on man coverage. You know, it's like, and especially if we're talking, okay, clutch time, right, third down, and you're in the fourth quarter and you're in a playoff game, you're going to see a lot of man press. Okay, can somebody get open? I feel like that's been a huge problem for the Bills, trying to close out games. And really, that's all we're talking about. Like, if we're just talking about the Bills, Matt, it's all about the edges, right? Like, okay, yeah. Between the 20s, first three quarters, gold. Like, they're great, you know? But like, okay, now we're getting into, you know, clutch time. And too much of it is basically just Josh Allen putting the Superman cape on and being like, okay, go make a play. I'm sorry, man, but like, that's just not good enough, you know? And again, we bring back that Stephon Diggs comparison. It's like, no, Diggs actually legitimately helped him in those areas. And now they just don't have that guy. So, yeah, man, that's why I bring up Mike Evans, because, again, he's been a really good man beater. And you know, we talk about, you know, being able to get open consistently downfield, another area of need, I think, for Buffalo that they still, with DJ Moore, I don't think they have.
Well, I think the good news, if you are a DJ Moore fan or you're really excited about him, if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, if you just kind of look at the way Joe Brady's offense runs with the X receiver, and I think this was true for DJ back in Carolina when he was this guy, and it's definitely true of even Keon Coleman as a rookie, that route tree is very slant, curl, nine route oriented. Whereas with the role that he played for Ben Johnson last year, it's a lot more of like digs and outs, which doesn't really lean into that leans into what Luther Burden does really well. It leans into what Roma Dunze does really well. If you want to go back to Detroit, it also leans into what Amon Ross St. Brown and Jameson Williams do well, like plant that foot in the ground, explode out of the breaks with good timing, being in the right place at the right time, which just isn't DJ Moore's strength. So if you look at that route tree, that does not lean into Moore's strengths. However, his 2025 success rate by route chart, 62% on the nine route, really good number. 88.2% success rate on the curl route, really good number. Slant route, 80%, still a really, really strong number there for DJ Moore. So I do think you could make an argument that we're maybe – if we flip his role a little bit, if we lean into the routes that he still, I think, does run well, which is verticals and dropping his weight. Think about everybody remembers that game that DJ Moore had with Justin Fields against the Commanders on Thursday Night Football. I mean, the Commanders were horrendous, but on defense, by the way, still were last year too. Yeah. Constant struggle for them. Anyways, that was just a very hey, he's got one-on-one man coverage looks, and DJ had over 200 yards in that game, which is a big reason why his stats from 2023 look so good. Sometimes I'm not the guy that's take away his best game and what did he do, but that carried a heavy burden that game in terms of the total season numbers with Justin Fields. But a lot of the stuff in that game, if you go back and watch it, is DJ Moore just along the vertical plane and dropping his weight and getting open on curl routes and stop routes. And I think he still does that really well. That's just not really what Ben Johnson does offensively, which is why I think he wasn't a good fit there. But it is a good fit in Joe Brady's offense. In addition to the fact, I still think DJ is pretty good, decisive, and explosive with the ball in his hands. And we know that this offense, if Bills fans have been complaining about a ton, but they do want to throw a lot of screens. They want to get the ball out of Josh Allen's hands quickly at times, allow him to not make mistakes. So in that way, I think it is a good fit. So I think that, again, just for our specific exercise here,
yes,
he's a tough guy to rank in this discussion because I comparing him to AJ Brown and comparing him to Garrett Wilson from a talent perspective, I think he's probably third. Mm-hmm. But I do think, and I'm even from a production ceiling standpoint, I don't really know what his ceiling is, but I think he's a better fit in this offense than he was in the previous offense. And I think it could be a good, solid 2026 season for DJ Moore this year. But again, I'm glad we're talking this out because he is somebody that I have struggled to get a feeling on exactly what I think about him, which makes him difficult in this exercise.
All right. So again, we've hemmed and hawed here. Okay. We've got Garrett Wilson. We got DJ Moore. We got AJ Brown. Who's your favorite in this division to be the most productive? And I'll let you define most productive. Maybe it's yards, maybe it's receptions, maybe it's touchdowns, some kind of combination of yards, receptions, and touchdowns. But who's the most productive AFC East wide receiver?
Well, look, if we're just going off of like my fantasy rankings this year, yep. I'm going to have AJ Brown ranked higher than Garrett Wilson, but it will be closer than the like market and ADP has it, because I'm a little skeptical about, I want to bake in some risk with AJ Brown that he's in decline and all the things we've talked about on the show. You know, we talked about last episode, right? With the Drake May, AJ Brown pairing and everything. I want to bake in some risk there, but I still think, even if he rolls out as the player that he was last year, you know, where he was obviously a lesser version of himself, but, you know, not completely off the cliff and still had solid enough success rate versus man coverage, you know, and could still get open on the short and intermediate routes, just not as much of a vertical threat from a separation standpoint. Even if he's that guy and he's playing with Drake May and he's playing in this offense, which actually I think has some good complementary pieces, and the offensive line could be better this year than it was last year. The run game could be better this year than it was. I think that AJ Brown still edges Garrett Wilson slightly from a production standpoint. Now, if we were to just remove team situation,
yeah,
who would I rank ahead of the other? I mean, I would say right now in this moment, I think Garrett Wilson is a better wide receiver than AJ Brown.
Okay, so there you go. I like it. Give me a – and oh, by the way, Garrett Wilson is entering his fifth NFL season. In his first three, he had 1,100, 1,000, and 1,100 with a lot of no-name quarterbacks. So – and I'm not saying Geno Smith is not a no-name quarterback, because at this point, Geno Smith is absolutely a no-name quarterback. But again, it is interesting. It is interesting.
Geno Smith last year with the Raiders, I mean, it was not a good product. He ranked 39th in adjusted net yards per attempt and 33rd in dropback success rate among 45 quarterbacks with 100 plus passes last year. And typically, guys who are going to turn 36 in the middle of the season, we don't bet on career rebirth from them. But can Geno Smith just be like the best version of? Not even the best version of himself, but just a better version than he was last year for the Raiders. And can he get Garrett Wilson the football? That's really obviously all we are asking from him.
Yeah. Listen, if he can go from, what'd you say he was, 39th, 33rd?
39th like in adjusted net yards per attempt, which obviously includes
39th.
Like, out of 45 quarterbacks.
There's only
out of 45 quarterbacks. By the way, not the names below him.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the JJ McCarthy's, the Browns quarterbacks. Oh, no. Oh, Brady no. Cook. But, well, that's the thing. Like Brady Cook played. I know that it was after Garrett Wilson was hurt. Brady Cook played for this team last year. He took snaps for this team last year. So the bar to be an upgrade for the Jets, even Geno Smith, what he was last year, does technically clear the bar.
Yeah. So if he goes from like 39th to like 25th, I don't know. I could tell myself a story where Garrett Wilson ends up being the most productive wide receiver here. I don't know. Could be.
Probably it also depends too. If we're just talking about production, it does also depend on what we think about the other guys in the room. You know, that's obviously a big part of this. What do we think about like Ken Omar Cooper Jr.? Because it is a little, and we talked about this, it's a little crowded, right? A little more crowded than usual with Garrett Wilson as the number one receiver there. So that's obviously part of it from a production standpoint. Okay, so these were the quarterbacks that ranked below Geno Smith in adjusted net yards per attempt last year, where I said he was 39th out of 45. Dylan Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders are 41 and 42. Wow. My guy, Tyrod Taylor, is 43. That's a Jets quarterback, by the way.
Tyrod, let's go.
Jake Browning, 44, and Brady Cook, 45th. So two Jets quarterbacks were in the mix here. Justin Fields was 36, and he obviously was the one that played most of the season with Garrett Wilson. I don't know. What did you say? You want him to be 25th?
Yeah, 25th. Can he be 25th?
So can he be, you know, Tyler Shuck was 25th last year. Okay. Jackson Dart was 26th.
Yeah, can he be better than Jackson Dart?
Kirk Cousins was 28th, you know?
Okay, I think he could be better than Kirk Cousins at this
point. Bryce Young was 29.
Okay.
I think he could be better. I mean, I think he could be.
I think he'd be better.
At that level.
Yeah, sure. At that level. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. 100%.
I mean, dude, Jacoby Brissett pumped a ton of production into the Cardinals passing game when he started, obviously, for a lot of environmental reasons, not just what Jacoby Brissett was doing. He was 22nd.
Okay.
Adjusted net yards per attempt. You know what I'm saying? Like,
let it fly. Let it rip. Gino, let it rip. What do you got to lose, pal?
Just his starting job to Cade Klubnik, which is definitely a thing that could happen, I think.
Yes. I think it is something that will happen, as a matter of fact. We're talking about a quarterback in his mid-30s, probably going to get hit a couple of times. Yeah, I think for sure we're going to see Cade Klubnik.
If we want to do success rate, by the way, I said Gino Smith was 33rd. 35 and 36, Justin Fields and Tyrod Taylor. So obviously these are not player isolating stats, the whole deal, but even the player that he was last year technically is better than what the Jets got at quarterback. And beautiful. I mean, the Garrett Wilson of it all, dude, is just obviously so tilting to look at the player comparison tool and, you know, just look at like all of these absolute studs. You know, that Garrett Wilson pops up
monsters
from a player comparison standpoint. We've got his 2024 season. I'm actually going to have his 2025 season up on the site on Monday this coming week. But his 2024 season, top comparables, Jamar Chase 2023, Jamar Chase 2022, Antonio Brown Steelers.
Antonio Brown.
Wow. Stephon Diggs 2019 Vikings. DeAndre Hopkins 2018 Texans. So,
wow. Just best like, of the best.
Yeah, tier one elite receivers. I don't think Garrett Wilson, by the way, is an elite receiver. I would put him in tier two in the NFL. I don't think he's quite graduated. Just a couple little things here and there. But yeah, to me, there's no question he could be a top 10 receiver in the NFL. It's just I don't know that this is going to be the year for it for obvious reasons.
No, that's a bummer. Okay, so if we're ranking it, it's AJ Brown. And then what? Is it DJ Moore, Garrett Wilson, most productive?
God, I'll go Garrett Wilson. I'm just a little more confident with where he is in his career and a little more confident too. And again, this is production. It would be Garrett Wilson ahead of DJ Moore for sure, like just talent wise where he is at this point. But I just think Garrett Wilson probably has a higher target upside than DJ Moore does at this point. You know, the Bills have a great run game. They want to be successful this year in that regard. They don't want to. I guarantee you, now that we have DJ Moore in the mix, we're not going to be hearing everybody eats from the Bills anymore. Okay. I don't think that's going to happen, but they still want to get other guys involved. And I just don't think DJ Moore at this point is a, you know, you can funnel 25 plus percent of your passing targets every single week to DJ Moore. I don't think he's quite at that level anymore. I do think Garrett Wilson is at that level.
Hey gang, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and we are gonna move. We are gonna answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, dark horse wide receiver to be the best in either their team or the division. Look, we can do all the projections we want, but Matt Harmon, as you know, as you're very familiar with, as I am very familiar with, the NFL season very rarely goes as planned. As a matter of fact, I can say it never goes as planned. So I like to talk about dark horses. Again, you're talking to the sleeper king over here. Give me a sleeper. Give me a dark horse wide receiver that could potentially be the best in the division. If I'm listing off some names here, for the Jets, it's Adonai Mitchell, it's Omar Cooper. For Buffalo, Khalil Shakir, maybe Keon Coleman, maybe Josh Palmer. Now, as a matter of fact, because that list is so light, I'll throw Dalton Kincaid into the mix. Okay, well,
he's a tight end, so.
Okay, he is. I'll say a dark horse pass catcher to be the best and most productive in the division. Romeo Doubs, Kyle Williams, Kayshon Booty, Pop Douglas in New England. And in Miami, it's just a grab bag. It's Malik Washington, Chris Bell, Caleb Douglas. And again, since I'm doing Dalton Kincaid and since Miami's so gross, I will throw in Devon Achan here as well. So again, dark horse pass catcher to lead the division and be the most productive, however you want to define that.
You know, I think it's Romeo Doubs, actually. I know that's like the non-satisfactory answer. It's probably like the is the milk toast answer, maybe, you know, the safe answer. But at the same time, I think it actually is the right answer because of all of these guys we just listed out here.
Okay.
I think he's pretty clearly coming off the best season of any of these guys. You know,
Easily.
And so I think that just makes him the, and I'm throwing out Dalton Kincaid and Devon Achane. Okay. I'm talking about receivers. I'm not talking about fake passing production to the running back. Okay.
We're talking about Brock Bowers is the new JSN. Didn't you hear?
You told me, you know, you're the only person I've heard say that. So I don't know if we just argued against a straw man. I'm sure you've actually heard someone say that. I've never heard anyone say that, but.
Oh, there was a big ESPN article about it. So no, it was definitely a thing, you know, I'm like, okay.
I missed it. Bummer.
Good for you.
I'll put a bookmark in to go back to it. But no, I do think the Jets young guys are interesting. Like I think I've always been kind of a centrist on Adonai Mitchell. There are some people that think he's like secretly the best separator in the NFL. And then there are other people who think he's completely garbage. And I actually kind of think he's somewhere in between that. Yeah. Shockingly, those two massive chasms there. I think I'm going to come somewhere in the middle on that one. I don't want to totally give up on him, but I think it would be kind of shocking if he ends up being the best receiver on his team, much less the best receiver in the division. Omar Cooper Jr. obviously is a first round talent and kind of is almost just like completely undiscussed. He has to be like the cheapest you could ever draft a first round receiver in fantasy football this year. I know he's like barely a first round pick in the whole deal, but man, nobody wants to take Omar Cooper Jr., which I get. He might be the third receiver on the Jets. I get it. But still, I mean, he's really talented and probably if we were to say, let's redo this for 2027, he probably is the right answer. I do think he can kind of have like a limited role in year one. Willing to be wrong about that because I actually really do like the prospect. But I do think Romeo Doubs, you know, Khalil Shakir is really good, but he's in a hyper-specific role. And I think at this point, I think based on what he's shown so far, it would be like a big leap for him to come out of that role at this point. Just based on what we've seen so far, I think he is in the correct role and the right deployment. They should continue to do that. I feel very similar with him with like Rashee Rice, where yeah, it's nice to dream that maybe he could do more things, but at this point, he's really damn good at what he's doing. They should just keep having him do that, and they need other people to emerge in the offense alongside of him, which is why they've got DJ Moore. So I'm going to kind of rule him out there. Keon Coleman, Josh Palmer, no thanks. That would be like a big shock to me. The Dolphins guys, I mean, Chris Bell is another obviously like wild card. I thought he was an early second round talent, but kind of hard to bet on him just based on the fact that even if he does get on the football field at some point during the season, he's going to be behind from a rookie standpoint. Yeah. I like Malik Washington a lot, but I think he probably is like, again, limited application role player. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Really like the prospect, but still. So I come back to the Patriots room and they do have like a deep group here. You know, they've got Matt Collins. They've got Pop Douglas, Kayshon Booty, Kyle Williams. Williams is a little bit of a wild card, but coming off a weird season. So I come back to Romeo Doubs here, who, you know, I was just tweeting about this with Alfredo Brown, our quarterback guy, you know, where there's some reports that Romeo Doubs is going to be the big slot receiver in this Patriots offense. And I'm curious to see if that holds because
I don't think so.
He's weird. He's really taken strides as an X receiver the last 2 years. I think his best work comes against man coverage as the X receiver. And I mean, we talked about this in the last episode. I'd like to see Doubs used a decent bit at X so that they can move AJ Brown around. And I do think Doubs has really turned into a nice route runner. So maybe that does translate more to slot receiver stuff. I don't know, but I think that he's just the best player of this group. So that's kind of my process of why I think he could be sneaky productive. And yeah, yet again, another guy that I'm surprised. We talked about this on the boring picks in best ball draft video that we did for YouTube. I think he's going to have some good weeks as Drake May's number two receiver. Like they paid him, they targeted him. I think he's going to have some nice weeks and probably a good season overall.
The way you described Romeo Doubs is basically how you can describe him every single year in Green Bay, you know, like a little bit underrated. And like again, if we're talking about fantasy managers, like fantasy managers get annoyed by it unless you're like a Romeo Doubs guy. But even if you are Romeo Doubs guy, it's like you're not sure when to start this guy. You know?
Yeah, you're hoping for 5 for 78 and a touchdown, like in a best case scenario.
Right. Sometimes it gives you 3 for 30 and you're like, oh my God, this sucks. But yeah, no, I agree with you.
But don't you think like it could be a little bit different in New England. Like, they did proactively target him. You know, they, I think he's
very early in the process. Yeah.
Very early in the process. You know, sure. Obviously we all knew they were getting AJ Brown. So he was always going to be, you know, not the featured number one receiver or anything like that. Even if they didn't get AJ Brown, I don't think Dobbs is a number one receiver, but he's a perfectly good number two. And I just think that it kind of depends on your opinion of AJ Brown. And obviously people know at this point, I'm just a little bit cautious with Brown this year, but I just think there's going to be times where he ends up being like really surprisingly productive. And it could just be a little bit different in Green Bay, where it was this heavy rotation based. And I think there was more of like a level kind of talent around that group. Like, I think Dobbs, Watson, Reed, Wicks, they were all kind of a close to the same level.
Yeah.
At different times. I actually kind of think there's a pretty decent drop off from Romeo Dobbs to the rest of the guys on the Patriots roster.
I'm intrigued by Kyle Williams. I think he showed some interesting things. As a matter of fact, shoot, I want to see Kyle Williams in the slot. Let's see what this guy could do. And it's interesting. The coaching staff has definitely moved on from Pop Douglas. You know, he was popular with the previous regime. And I just think, you know, once Josh McDaniels got back in there, Pop Douglas has been kind of sort of a non-factor. But I'm intrigued by Kyle Williams. And while I agree with you in principle and in general that there is a drop-off from Dobbs to Williams, I will hold the door open to the possibility that the talent gap is actually not that different at all. But again, there's a lot to be proven in that statement, though. There's a lot of... There's a long road to be walked before we get to that talent gap, you know?
69.2% success rate versus man for Dobbs last year, 69 against press, 75 against zone. That's 54th, 59th, 24th percentile, respectively. I just typically think like a guy who has – he was the X receiver last year, 84.6% sample snaps outside, on the line for nearly 82%.
Yeah.
Like that's – he was a perfectly – good X receiver the Packers last year. That's what I'm saying. Like, why does he have to be the movement guy here, the slot guy? I think actually AJ Brown, you know, even if he's declined, is just more of a dynamic mover than Dobbs. Dobbs is more like that technician, and maybe that they see something differently from like what they want out of the slot receiver in that offense, like from a technique and a timing perspective. But I don't know. I think he could actually have a nice year as the X receiver for this offense.
I think that's the story you have to tell yourself if you're saying that Dobbs could emerge, right? It's not, it goes beyond like even in like an injury. It would be basically they anchor AJ Brown to the X and they let Romeo Dobbs move around, and Drake May, being a distributor of the football, not locking into one guy, gets it to the open guy. If coverage is shading towards AJ Brown, Dobbs is going to be more often more open, right? So I think if that's the story that we're telling ourselves for Dobbs, it's not. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility for sure.
So he's called AJ Brown a sacrificial X receiver.
That's exactly what I called him. Yes, that's exactly what I called him. Hey, listen, man. First of all, let me just say this: in the first three games, there will be a protracted effort to get him the football. But if that does not bear fruit, this team still has like Super Bowl aspirations. They're not going to be out here playing fantasy football being like, we just brought in this guy, we have to get him the football. Mm-hmm. I do think that in the first three games, they'll make that happen. And there will be a lot of plays designed to go get AJ Brown the football. But as you said, there was some drop off. If that drop-off ends up being super-duper dramatic, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, Mike Vrabel's not going to be the guy. Josh McDaniels not going to be the guy. Be like, okay, cool, let's just keep getting this guy the football. You know what I'm saying? Like, they'll just be like, hey, let's just get back to the offense that we had last year. That got us to the damn Super Bowl, you know? So, yeah. I don't know. It'll be, like I said, it'll be interesting.
Interesting, yeah.
Quarterback wide receiver matching. We go to Denver. Bo Nix. Jalen Waddle, how do these guys match up? When we're talking about most thrown routes for Bo Nix, it's 15% on the check down, so we'll just throw that out. 13.3% on the nine route. So it's either check down or touchdown, baby. I like it. But 13.3% nine route, 12.8% curl, 12.3% out. Actually, really, when you're taking a look at this, this would favor, you would imagine, a lot of X receiver stuff. Again, his three most thrown routes, not including the check down. It's the nine, it's the curl, it's the out. And those are all pretty relatively fairly close together, anywhere between 12.3 and 13.3%. So again, nine, curl, out. If those are his most thrown routes, we're talking about the most, best success rates on the routes thrown. It's actually the curl route again, 84%. 84% success on the slant route, really good. 56% on the dig, not great. 65% on the out, not great. And 62% on the comeback, not great. So his two best routes in terms of success rate, curls and slants, not so much on the dig, out, comeback. How does that match up with Jaylen Waddle?
Yeah, I definitely think there's some good and some things that I think Knicks will need to improve on to really get the most out of Jaylen Waddle. And you could also argue that Jaylen Waddle is going to make him look significantly better than some of the guys that he's worked with previously. I mean, right now, like, you look at that out route at 65.2%. And I mean, dude, like, who are we throwing out cuts to with the Denver Broncos at this point? Like, who's got the speed to sort of threaten separate? And like, Courtland Sutton is a very kind of like a limited player. He's a good player, clearly, for sure. He's someone who, you know, knows how to work. Knows how to work like in contested situations. He actually runs a pretty good dig route, which is kind of funny that Knicks threw a dig route relative to the average starting quarterback at a higher rate, a success rate, 56%, probably could be better. But yeah, I think that there's something there in terms of like what he is as a player, but he's a limited guy. He doesn't win against zone coverage, whereas Jaylen Waddle, 81.3% success rate versus zone. I think actually pretty good working on outbreaking routes against zone coverage. So I think the way that Jaylen Waddle helps Bo Nix is like he just gives him a better quality target on some of these breaking routes, which I don't think they've had so far. I mean, that's something too, by the way. You start looking, maybe I'm just way over my skis on Waddle, I am really, really high on Waddle. Like in fantasy, yeah. I've got him ranked as a top 12, 13 receiver, and he still goes in the 20s at that position, which I just think is kind of crazy. Mm-hmm, I think the two biggest pushbacks you get to Jaylen Waddle is number one, like he gets hurt a lot, which I think is, you know, fair. You know, he's kind of been, not that he's had like major injuries and missed huge chunks of seasons, but he has had like nagging injuries and had to come off the field. You know, that's a big part of it. The other thing is like, well, Sean Payton always rotates his receivers. Does he? Or does he rotate his receivers in Denver where it is like kind of a bunch of role players, you know? Like, yeah. Here's the deal. Right. Like, Jaylen Waddle's not going to get treated like Troy Franklin and Marvin Mims, you know, or Pat Bryan. I like Pat Bryan, but like, that's just not, they're not going to trade a first and a third round pick for a guy who's as good as Jaylen Waddle and then treat him like Troy Franklin. Like, that never happens. So I don't think that really holds up to merit, but yeah, I think that those guys are so like they're useful players, but they just don't project cleanly as vertical receivers, especially even if they have some speed, whereas Jaylen Waddle pretty clearly does. So I think that nine route percentage in terms of how often Bo Nix throws it. I guess what, buddy, you're going to have the best nine route runner you've had in a long time in Jaylen Waddle here.
Okay, so when you take a look at Jaylen Waddle's success rates from his previous season, not his most recent season here, 58% success rate on the nine was incredible on these deeper routes, man, like nearly 90% success rate on the post. It's really funny, Matt, when I think of Sean Payton's offense, I think actually of deeper post routes for big plays, right? And again, speed, you know, speed slot stuff that down the seams, that's definitely a staple in Sean Payton's offense too. But when I think about big plays, I do tend to think of big post routes there. And for whatever reason, Bo Nix just was not great at throwing the post route, just 33.3% success rate throwing the post. And yet he, again, that was a pretty big part of his, pass diet too. 11% of his routes were on the post. So it's not a small number, and he just wasn't that effective throwing the post. So I do wonder if we have to see better success from Bo Nix throwing that post route, especially if we're going to try to unlock Jaylen Waddle, I think.
Yeah, I think Knicks, from an arm strength perspective, probably leaves a little bit to be desired. Yeah, but
for sure.
But I do think, yeah, I think a little bit average there, but he is aggressive and has like the right mindset for it. I just don't know if maybe he always has the arm strength to write the checks that that he's trying to cash, you know, essentially here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that the most analogous use case for Jaylen Waddle, if we're doing Sean Payton history, mm-hmm. is 2016 Brandon Cooks, where that 2016 season, you know, they had Willie Snead, who was kind of like a slot receiver, and then they had Michael yep. Thomas as their X receiver. I know everybody always remembers Michael Thomas as this big slot. Never happened. Was always an X receiver for that team. I know that was like when people thought he could be a big. He's literally his entire season in reception perception. He took from 2016 to 2022. Michael Thomas was outside on at least 72% of his snaps and over on the line of scrimmage on more than 68% of his snaps every single season. He never had a slot.
The only reason people thought this though, Matt, okay, is because he got called
the slant. Yeah, slant boy. I know, but like they were running a lot of quick slants from the X receiver position. Okay,
they were.
He was really good at releasing and getting open against press man coverage. He just never was. And by the way, he was pretty good at separating down the field. But by the time like he leaned into his prime, Drew Brees' arm was pretty clearly diminished. Yeah. Obviously, anybody watching Drew Brees at that point could tell you that. That doesn't take anything away from his excellent career, but that was what his arm was at that point. And then like when Drew Brees retires, they bring in Jameis Winston. We never got to see those two guys working together really, because that's when Michael Thomas's ankle started to become a massive problem.
Right.
Anyways, whatever. Point is, 2016, the Saints draft Michael Thomas. 87% outside, 69% on the line of scrimmage. Willie Snead, 75% actually outside, and 60.7% in 2016, he was 22% outside. He was 77% in the slot, off the line of scrimmage more than he was on it. Brandon Cooks that year, meanwhile, 63% outside, 30.6% snaps on ball. That is the lowest rate of any season I've charted for Brandon Cooks his entire career. The previous two seasons for Brandon Cooks in 14 and 15, and that was a reason for me. I think actually Cooks needed a role change because he kind of struggled against press coverage early in his career. He was on the line of scrimmage 55 and 52% of his snaps. So he goes down from those two seasons, averaging about, you know, 53-ish to 54%. To 2016, 31% snaps from a percentage standpoint on the line of scrimmage. I think that's what's going to happen for Jaylen Waddle. Jaylen Waddle has actually been more of an on-ball receiver than an off-ball receiver because Tyreek Hill's been doing all the fun move-around stuff in Miami. Even last year, Malik Washington was that guy, not Jaylen Waddle, even once Tyreek Hill got hurt. So if you look at then the routes that Brandon Cooks ran in 2016, by the way, if you have a reception perception sicko subscription, you can look at all mm-hmm. this historic data yourself as well. Cooks that year did run a 9 route on 25% of his routes. Obviously, we know Jaylen Waddle can run 9 routes, but 9% post route rate, 12.5% dig route rate, curl rate, and then 15% slant route rate. And that's interesting too, because I think clearly Bo Nix did not throw a lot of slants last year, less than 6%, but the 84% success rate in the charting is good for Bo Nix. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty solid number there. And Jaylen Waddle, meanwhile, obviously really good on those routes as well. Almost 20% of his routes were slants last season, nearly an 87% success rate. That's where I think that Jaylen Waddle actually will help this Broncos team, is that he's going to be the best quick separator they have against both man and press coverage. Like Courtland Sutton can get open on those routes every now and again, primarily against press man, but it's more towards the perimeter. It's more like laborious stuff for him to get open, whereas Waddle gets open quickly, cleanly. He gets that separation. I think he's going to give the Broncos a layup target in addition to some of the big breaking routes like the posts and the outs, where I do think like Bo Nix needs to actually improve there from a quarterback standpoint. But they also, I would argue, haven't really had a reliable target on those patterns.
Where do you think these guys line up when we're talking about Courtland Sutton versus Jalen Waddle, because that I found it interesting when you brought up the comparisons there in New York with Mike Thomas and Brandon Cooks. You know, where do these guys line up? Is Jalen Waddle, who has, again, in Miami, was anchor to the line and, you know, he was very much an X receiver. Does he finally get move around options in this Sean Payton offense?
That is my guess. It's one of the reasons I've been so high on the Jalen Waddle addition for this team in real life. Why I've been really high on Jalen Waddle in fantasy, because, yeah, I think Waddle, to your point, and, you know, I've brought this up a lot when discussing Waddle, from 2022 to 2024, he was outside on 77% of his snaps. He was on the line of scrimmage for 81%. And the latter figure actually increased across those three seasons. And then last season in 2025, despite Hill missing all that time, Waddle took 79% of snaps on the line. He was outside for 84%. Now, the outside rate obviously is going to look a little different, because this is a very 12 personnel, kind of 22 personnel heavy offense. They don't use a bunch of spread stuff there in Miami. But nevertheless, like, he's been the outside on ball receiver. I think that basically flips for Jalen Waddle. Maybe not to the extreme of like he's in the 20% snaps on ball rate, but like I said, for Brandon Cooks, 69% snaps off the line of scrimmage in 2016, 31% snaps on the line of scrimmage. I think that's kind of what we're looking at for Jalen Waddle, because if you take a look at Courtland Sutton, he in 2024, 86% snaps outside, 79% on the line of scrimmage, pretty similar in 2025 as well. Like, we know what Courtland Sutton is. Courtland Sutton is a big X receiver. That's what he's been for this team since Sean Payton got there. It's what he's been throughout his entire career. He has never had a rate of snaps on ball lower than 73%. He's the X receiver of this offense. I think Pat Bryant is my pick to be the third receiver here, is my guess. And he will be kind of that big he will be the big slot in this offense. That's what we know Pat Bryant to be, based on both we figured, based on his prospect charting, that was probably his best role in the NFL, right? And then last year, that's pretty much what we saw for Bryant as a rookie. 58% snaps in the slot, but he actually took more snaps on ball than off ball, which I think will be key here, because he's a bigger guy. He is a pretty good rugged blocker. I think when they get into 11 personnel, I guess Evan Ingram's still going to be the tight end on this team, I guess.
No, I don't think so. I think they'll cut him.
Is it going to be Justin Jolie, who people compared to like Jonnu Smith, I think was like someone I think maybe that was a Lance Zierlein comparison. They took him in the draft this year. That's Adam so Troutman, maybe kicking
Jolie. Jolie to me is way more like a movement tight end.
Jonnu Smith, like, and when he was that movement guy in Tennessee. I'm saying, like, okay. So
I'm thinking like late career Jonnu, where he's just like, you know,
yeah, well,
more flat footed. Let me just
put who knows, in. but anyways, I think, by the way, like, he's a day three rookie tight end. Who knows? But it's like Adam Troutman, still kind of like a Sean Payton guy, whatever. But anyways, my point saying that is, like, when they get into, and by the way, they could be one of these teams that plays like four receivers. They could be a little bit more of a spread team this year, because Pat Bryant could almost kind of be like a de facto tight end. Mm-hmm, and then like, it's Marvin Mims, Troy Franklin in the other slot position, while Jalen Waddle is kind of the Z slot option there, moving around. So that's the thing I think with Waddle. He's going to just be detached from the formation a ton. He's going to be the primary Z receiver, really, for the first time in the last several seasons, because he's been that mostly on-ball guy since 2022 when Tyreek Hill arrived on the scene.
Yeah, there you go. By the way, this is the last year of the two-year deal for Evan Ingram. He's got a $14 million cap hit. I guess it doesn't really, I don't know how much, it doesn't help you at all to cut him at this point.
Yeah, that's why I kind of, like, he'll just be there.
Who are you going to go sign?
But he's not an inline tight end, so I think that's kind of, they'll do the in, like, he's the off ball with their, in 11 personnel, he's off ball, Bryant is on ball, Courtland Sutton's on ball, Jalen Waddle's off ball, moving around and doing all the fun stuff. And I just think, like, you look at, like, who's the most dynamic player of all the guys I just listed off there?
Yeah,
it's Jalen Waddle. It's number 17. Right. Like, he's going to absolutely cook. And especially on some of these breaking routes, like, him off ball in motion, running a slant with that strong success rate for Bo Nix and the strong success rate for Jalen Waddle, he's going to go crazy. He's going to be in the open field. He's going to be running after the catch, the whole deal. Not to mention like the posts where Bo Nix needs to get better, the digs where Bo Nix needs to get better. I think Waddle's going to give him the best target of his career on those routes.
Yeah, the one hesitation I have here when we're talking about quarterback wide receiver matching here is that the pass route percentages need to change. You know, it can't be so much of this like check down screen type stuff. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, as Alfredo put it here, Bo Nix, no quarterback charted through a higher combined percentage of flats and check downs than Nix at roughly 29%. That's got to change, you know, and it probably, yeah. Hey, listen, it probably will with Jalen Waddle in the fold, but if we can get, you know, 5.6% slant route participation percentage for Bo Nix is outrageous. Like that's got to get into the double digits. And if it gets into the double digits, that is where I'm with you. Jalen Waddle has been absolutely feasting for his entire career. But that percentage, that diet, man, it needs to change with Bo Nix. That would be my only thing. I think it will change. I'm with you. I'm pretty confident it will change, but it has to change though. And that's where it gets a little, okay. Where are we at in terms of the player and the play caller and all of those things, you know?
And two last caveats on this whole deal while we're doing, you know, maybe devil's advocate stuff.
Yeah.
One, Bo Nix is very insistent that this is not a big deal. You know, he almost is kind of like balking at the idea that it's even a talking point, his injury. He is not concerned about it. That being said, it is the ankle injury that ended his season before the AFC Championship game in a very tragic fashion. And it wouldn't say it's been like a completely clean offseason, you know, of news there. He had some swelling due to bone spurs and underwent a second cleanup surgery. So just that's something to monitor too, which by the way, probably, I think Bo Nix is an interesting guy as a scrambler and a mover and everything, but I think he probably could be better, like stay in the pocket, be decisive and let these routes develop. Some of these things we're talking about here, with the Denver Broncos and like more of a traditional passing game than just the deep pass check down type situation. The other part of this too, new play caller, Davis Webb is calling the plays this year. How long will that last?
How much you buying that?
Oh, I'm buying that it's right now. Davis Webb is the new play caller for the right Denver Broncos.
Okay, in week 8, how much you buying that?
I don't tell me how the offense looks in the first month of the season. If they're cooking, you know, we'll see. But yeah, it is kind of crazy, like a true control freak, like Sean Payton giving up play calling. Totally. It is. Yeah. Interesting, but I don't know if you read that, like Seth. I'm gonna be honest here. I didn't read it, but I saw the clips on social media, like of Seth Wickersham was like embedded with the Broncos during this whole playoff run this last year, and you know, Sean Payton had these guys there all night, you know, kind of grinding into it, and I don't know. We'll see how it all goes. But
that's what I'm saying, man. This guy's he's never given up play calling duties in 20 some odd years. All of a sudden he's going to do it for a first time play caller in Davis Webb. Like, okay. All right. It'll be,
they must really like Davis Webb.
It'll be interesting. We'll see. I mean, it'd be one thing if there was like a certified play caller, you know, like a guy who's been in the trenches for a while, like Davis Webb, dude, like, he's barely stopped playing. Just like it was like a couple years. He's only been out of the NFL for a couple years. He was like a backup for a bit now. You know, it's like, well, I don't know, man. Like, we'll see.
I get, again, there's some red flags here, but Jalen Waddle, definitely one of my flag plants this year. I think he's going to be awesome, and I couldn't care less about the Broncos' history of rotating their wide receivers when it's been like,
yeah, that's stupid. That's not, yeah, that's a nothing.
Don't care. Nothing burger. I really like the usage upcoming. I think that 2016 Brandon Cooks comparison is a fun one to look back at the historical data and give us kind of a picture of what strong. I think Jalen Waddle could be this year.
Yeah, that's pretty strong. Okay, we will continue our quarterback wide receiver matching all through this offseason here just because I think it's such a fun exercise. And it matters. I mean, this stuff matters. And by the way, we have the data. Might as well use it. Golly, let's go.
Charting. One guy I really want, I mean, we got to do this. And I think we got to get Alfredo on for this episode.
We do, yeah.
Which Bears wide receiver is better for Caleb Williams? Luka Berger, Rump, We got to lean into the culture war for that one.
We do. All right, we'll figure this one out. Quarterback, wide receiver matching, like I said, it's been a fun game. It's good data interpretation from our guy, Matt Harmon, here. But if you want to read the data yourself and compare those charts, why not? Okay, it's receptionperception.com. Again, that's receptionperception.com. We've got three new running back profiles up on the site right now, but quarterback profiles and, of course, all the wide receiver data you could want and need from Matt Harmon here as well. All right, man, we got to go. But remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.